Hello, members. We're going to get started here. If everybody can take their seats. We don't have a quorum yet, so we'll address the minutes in a minute. Just kidding. So I'm looking around to see if Representative Haley is here, and she is. Why don't we're going to do things a little bit out of order. We're going to go with Representative Haley's bill first, if you want to come on down. Members, before us, we're going to have House File 508. And
Madam Chair, if Representative Tapke was going to try to come as well to co-present, I think he had another bill up, so when he arrives.
Yes, we're going to move him, so he's right after you two, okay. So he should be walking in any minute now.
Okay.
Oh, and it does seem like we do have a quorum, so why don't we quickly do the minutes. Let's see here, who's had a chance to look at the minutes? Representative Barr, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes from the February 13th meeting.
Thank you. Representative Barr moves approval of the minutes for the Wednesday, February 13th meeting. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails in the minutes for the Wednesday, February 13th meeting is approved. And now before us, Representative Haley's bill. And Representative Erickson, would you like to move Representative Haley's bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House File 508 to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Actually, it's the chair's intention to lay it over for possible inclusion. So, Representative Haley, your bill is before us. Would you like to begin your testimony, state your name for the record, and then you can move on to your testifiers as well?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, members. Thanks for allowing us to present this House file to the committee. I'm Representative Barb Haley. This proposal came to me last biennium from our area superintendent, Mr. Mike Redman, and I will let him do most of the explaining on it. Just want to point out that it did pass last session with bipartisan support. It's a very simple bill and kind of an easy fix that helps our students, our families, and our school districts. So I would hope for your support today. I will allow Mr. Redman, who is now the superintendent at Shakopee School District, to give you the background and present the details.
Okay, and I think I see Representative Tapke joining you at the table. And also, Mr. Redman, would you like to state your name for the record and your title and proceed with your testimony?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Mike Redmond. I'm the superintendent of Shakopee Public Schools, and thank you for having me today. As Representative Haley mentioned, I think this is a pretty straightforward change, and currently the only way to dispense of or sell a tech device to a student at a reduced price is via a vendor through a contract for technical services. And what's desired is to have the ability to dispose of or sell a tech device at a reduced price directly between a school district or a school and students and their families. And as the representative mentioned, I'm formerly the superintendent of the Goodhue Public Schools, and there are a number of school districts in southeastern Minnesota that would benefit from this bill, and I think it could be replicated, that benefit, elsewhere in the state as well. But my example involves the Goodhue Public Schools via a technical services contract. Goodhue, which has an enrollment of 650 pupils, they do one-to-one Chromebooks in grades 3 to 12. And what they've done is, through that technical services contract, devised a way where there's a 50-50 split in cost between the district and the student or the student's family. The family then owns the device, which is wonderful in terms of equity. The student then has, 24/7, 365 access to that device. The district also benefits in a number of ways. One being, because the family owns the device, there's no management fees, which in a small district like Goodhue is $25 per device. They're getting a new device every 2 years, so it's about $12,500 over a two-year period in terms of cost savings. Also, there are savings in terms of labor, storage, tracking, and all those type of things. And then, you know, the obvious other cost is for the school district, it's 50% of the cost as compared to if they did district-owned devices. The vendor at times also wins, and I would argue sometimes too much so. One of the things that in working with vendors is they sell the district via educational pricing. So the district could often buy the devices directly at a cost savings. One year, I believe it was two school years ago, that cost savings would have been $40 per device. And had that, you know, that would have been about a $10,000 savings for the school district to split with the families. So it's significant in a small district, and obviously, you know, the greater the number of devices, the greater that potential savings.
Thank you, Superintendent. And Representative Haley or Representative Tapke, do you have anything else to add?
I just first, thank you, Madam Chair. Need to apologize for my tardiness. Sorry, I was talking to Shakopee Catholics, and we can chat for a little while. But thank you very much for hearing this bill. It's a really great bill. I'm proud that Representative Haley has pulled it forward. I'm happy to co-author this bill with her because it will do a lot of great things for our school district. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And then I'm going to go to member questions real quick. Representative Kunesh-Pudi.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, testifiers. When I'm not here, I'm a library media specialist at a middle school, and our school district does one-to-one Chromebooks as well, except we do it a little differently. We check the Chromebook out to the student, and then they have it for the entire school year to use, and then they return it at the end of the school year. And when you talk about the management of it, it is pretty intense. In a school that has over 900 students, at one time we had over 1,300 students, checking those out in the beginning of the school year and then getting them back and then maintaining them in between was pretty incredible. And it included a full-time educational assistant that just managed Chromebooks and a tech person, and we had to send them out and then bring them back. It was a lot of work logistically. So the couple of questions I have, first of all, is for your students, or when you did this in Goodhue, how did they where did they get maintenance or service if a screen was cracked or the keyboard wasn't working or one of those kind of situations?
Sure. We selected a specific device so that every student had the same device, which allowed us to pool those resources. We would do some of those fixes in-house. Screens were the big one. And then certainly some families, you know, we did insurance for a while, and then we moved away from that. There just wasn't enough of a desire. And the thought being, you know, in terms of a Chromebook, the device, it would be replaced every 2 years. And so we did work out. Every once in a while, there'd be a catastrophic failure. We would let people, you know, purchase the next one a little bit early or things like that.
Thank you, Superintendent Redmond.
And then if you were to, when you're selling or providing these Chromebooks to the students, a couple of questions. Are they brand new Chromebooks that you will be selling them? And then do you help with access to internet if they don't have reliable internet at home? Is there any kind of a service plan for a reduced cost internet or a hotspot that you would send home with the students?
Superintendent Redmond.
Thank you. Those are two terrific questions. The first is via the technical services contract with the vendor. The vendor actually sets up an online store, which works very well. But again, you know, the judgment in the Goodhue Public Schools would be that's probably not necessary. Other than that's the only way to accomplish this particular task. And then in that school district, it worked very, very hard to have access. Working with the city, tried a number of different things. Most recently, there's in progress of putting Wi-Fi on the school buses and certainly doing what we can to work with city and other governments. We've explored things like hotspots in different parts of the community. But most students have now reported they found a way around that. I did also have the pleasure of working with the Minnesota Broadband Community and, you know, K-12 Education. I always get that confused. Education Superhighway to bring broadband to some of the remote parts in the community too. So certainly not perfect in those efforts, but for the most part, students, the vast majority of students have access inside of school and outside of school as well.
Representative Commissioner, one more. Then I have Representative Herr, and then okay. I think that's about it. We'll move on.
Okay, just my last one, and then were there any? Is there a plan? Let's say a family just can't afford it. Like you've got two or three kids, and it just is above and beyond. Does the school district then have a plan to ensure that there is equity and access to information across the board, so that you don't end up with the haves and the have-nots?
Superintendent Redman.
Certainly, that was one of the highest priorities, and in Goodhue, what we did was we arranged a lease purchase agreement with a $19 two-year lease, followed by a $1 purchase at the end of that for any student who qualified for free or reduced lunch, and with other exceptional cases as well, because we wanted 100% of students to have access to those devices and didn't feel, you know, the ability to pay should not be a determinant in that. So feel very proud of that work.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So quick question that could be for anybody up there who can answer this, but in item C here where it says qualifying students at the price specified in a written resolution, so any school district can decide what they're going to sell those computers for, right? So I know you had a program that was you think you purchased for a dollar, but this could potentially generate quite a bit of revenue for certain school districts if they're actually selling. Like in St. Paul, we have 38,000 students, and we have a one-to-one iPad as well. And so I'm just curious as to if this is written resolution, how broad is that, and what particular, what can people set as pricing for that? And then the other thing is that, I mean, I am a little bit concerned about the fact that in paragraph B, item 4, says a family of student residing in the district whose total family income meets the federal definition of poverty, that that's one way to dispose of it is to give it to them. But then now we're saying that, well, the same group of people can pay for this, and what I would hate to see is school districts opting for C to dispose of these this technology, and then foregoing option 4, which would then create disparities for families that might have just received one versus now having to pay for one. Can you help answer those?
Superintendent Redman. Or Representative Haley, one of the two. Whoever would like to take it.
Thank you for your question. I'll have Superintendent Redman answer as well, but my intention here, our intention of the bill is that when you talk about that resolution, that the school board would be setting a price. So that's what that was referring to. It's not that our intention was not that they're making money, but that they're setting a equitable price, and that they would first allow those devices to go to families that didn't have the means of paying. So the price in mind is the school board could say zero if they wanted to. And they wanted to make sure that there wasn't a situation, as the other member said, of haves and have-nots, but that they address the needs of students that run free and reduced lunch first. But Superintendent Redman, you
Superintendent
can clarify.
Redman.
Sure, thank you. In Goodhue, what it is, it's an opportunity for a family to purchase for each student every 2 years a Chromebook. This most recent time, that would be for $100. That Chromebook would retail typically for $200. So the school district wasn't making any money on that. They were paying the other half of that Chromebook to allow the families that were buying it for full price to pay $100, but then also had the two-year lease for $19 plus a dollar, or $20 for students who qualified for free and reduced lunch. And as I read the legislation, it's a reminder to take care of the students in need first is how I read that, and I believe that a school board doing a resolution would read it that way as well, that you can't pick and choose, but you have to take care of the students in need first. And I believe that was the intent. So it's.
Representative Herr, did you have a follow-up?
And I appreciate the response. I'm always just cautious, especially when you paragraph B talked about just giving the computers away or the technology away. And then paragraph C talks about how if surplus school computers are not disposed of under paragraph B, saying, well, you don't have to actually do B, you can just do C, and C comes with a potential cost, it does make me worry, and it would really depend on people who are governing to really be thoughtful about not skipping options that would benefit certain communities who are marginalized or don't have specific access. So I would just like to just say that on the record and put that out there so that we're aware of that and we remember that.
Thank you, Representative Hurd. Maybe Representative Haley will talk to you offline and see if there's a better way to word that. I've got one more question, Representative Wazowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some clarification. I'm not clear on kind of how schools do this already, so I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about if a student or if their family were to buy a device, are they, who assumes ownership, I guess, for that in terms of like maintenance and if they were to take it home over the summer, if that's something you do, if it gets broken. And then my second question would be if a student didn't enroll for some reason but had already bought the computer, what sort of, is that a district level decision about what happens in that circumstance or what might happen in that case?
Superintendent Redmond?
Sure. I believe you're talking Goodhue specifically. Is the example I know best.
If you could speak to that.
Certainly. My apologies.
Reminder to go through the chair. Thank you.
Okay. My apologies. Once the family purchases the device in the online store currently, it is their device. It's the same as any other device that they would have bought at a store. And so they own it, and it's therefore it's theirs, you know, 24/7, 365. And then just with anything else they own, they do have a responsibility in terms of repair and maintenance and that. But we, you know, alluding to earlier, as a school district, it does help us to assist in that. You know, if we're all using the same device, it minimizes our expenses and resources. We can get very good at replacing a screen for a specific Chromebook and even keep some spare screens on hand. Or we take ones that have maybe gone out of use. We actually in Goodhue have a sellback program after so that we've got some to check out on a daily basis. And then we also use those for spare parts. So we're trying to, you know, help families have the most cost-effective access to a device that they own. They're purchasing at half price on the front, and then we're actually, you know, trying to help them maintain and keep it in good working order as we move forward, too.
Representative Wislawak, I believe you had one other secondary question. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. The other question was if they were to say they were going to enroll and then didn't for some reason, they moved or something happened in their family where they weren't enrolling, is there a process for what happens at that point?
Superintendent Redmond.
Thank you. We work on the device after enrollment, and so, you know, but certainly there are situations where folks move or things happen. It would be in our best interest to, it's only the one where there's a lease purchase. In that situation, we do ask for that back, but certainly that isn't going to happen 100% of the time. But we feel kind of looking out after the taxpayers' money in that case. In the other situation, you know, most people, once they enroll, they have every intention of going there. And that hasn't been a concern, but I certainly understand that it could. I guess in that case, you know, we would wish them well, and I hope they would make good use of that device in their new school setting.
Thank you. I'm going to open it up to anybody in the audience have any questions on this bill or would like to testify towards it. Any other further member questions? Representative Furr.
I didn't have a question, but I did just want to address that. Like, some large school districts, like St. Paul School District, we lease our computer, our iPads. And so I guess maybe to give us better data around potentially an offline, maybe we can just get an understanding of how many school districts actually buy their iPads and own them so that we can kind of get an idea of how big the scope of this might be. That would be really helpful because St. Paul wouldn't be including that because they don't get their iPads at the end of the usage of it. It's just for a lease. So.
Thank you, Representative Furr. I'm not sure where we get the info, but we can try to find out. Representative Haley, did you have any final closing comments?
No, I do not. Thank you for the thoughtful discussion.
Thank you. Then, Representative Haley, I will move that House File 508 be laid over. Thank you. And Representative Tabke, do you want to just stay up there and continue with your bill?
I do, but I have something very important to do first.
Oh, you do? That's nice. This is what makes us all take the stairs up to our offices, right?
Exactly.
So we have House Files 681 in front of us. And let's see, I got to get to my spot, my notes that I've taken here. Representative Kunesh-Podein, would you like to move the bill in front of us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 681 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Mary Kunesh-Podein moves House File 681 in front of the committee, and actually I'm going to be moving it towards Ways and Means. So, sorry, no worries. So now that we have the bill in front of us, Representative Tapke, would you like to give it a brief description and hand it over to your test there?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate your time here. We have House File 681, which is a bill that has been worked on previously. I'm really excited to have that here with us today. What this is a bill that allows for pregnant and parenting teens to be able to utilize school transportations back and forth from their school district to programs that will help pregnant and parenting teens be successful as they move forward. We have a few testifiers here with us today. We have Darren Kermis from Superintendent of the Southwest Metro Intermediate School District 288, and then also a couple of teens who have used this program in the past that this bill will dramatically help out. So, Madam Chair, when you're ready, we can turn it over to Mr. Kermis, Superintendent Kermis.
Superintendent, will you state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Darren Kermis, the Superintendent of Southwest Metro Intermediate School District. I want to bore you with some facts, but I think it's important to get just a little bit of a baseline here. The United States Centers for Disease Control reports that 25% of teen girls in America will become pregnant at least once by age 20. In Minnesota, in 2015, there were 3,161 pregnancies among Minnesota teens between the ages of 15 and 19. Sadly, while the graduation rate in Minnesota is generally reported to be over 80%, research suggests that only 50% of teen mothers receive a high school diploma or GED by age 22, with over 60% dropping out of high school. One program bucking this trend is located in Minnesota and is run by the Southwest Metro Intermediate District. The New Beginnings program for pregnant and parenting teens has been in existence since 1980. During that time, it has served over 2,500 students with an average on-time graduation rate of nearly 85%, even higher than the state average. While nearly 20% of teen moms nationally experience developmental delays, the children of teen moms experience developmental delays, only 7% of the children of teen moms who have had access to the New Beginnings program during their pregnancy experience similar developmental delays. This program succeeds because it combines quality academic instruction with parenting education and high-quality on-site child care. Unfortunately, this program is not fully realizing its mission due to the inability of many pregnant and parenting teens to be able to get to the program. This bill will serve to allow school districts to provide transportation to students attending a program such as New Beginnings in the same manner as it provides transportation for students attending care and treatment or special ed programs. Please note that the language in the bill retains local control and leaves the ultimate decision in terms of transportation to the local school district, because a district may provide this form of transportation but is not obligated to. If I could tell you a very brief story from New Prague, which is one of our member districts, that led to this bill coming forward a couple years ago. We had in New Prague, we had a small bus going to Chaska, bringing kids receiving intense special ed services. There were open seats on the bus. We had a couple of girls, two girls with young infants, who wanted to go to our pregnant and parenting teen program, New Beginnings, also located in Chaska. We thought, well, there's empty seats. Let's just have them hop on the bus and take them up there. At the end of the year, we had a fiscal audit of transportation from MDE, and MDE said, well, you had four people on the bus. Two of them didn't have disabilities. We're going to take back 50% of your transportation aid because you only had half the kids with disabilities. Now, I don't in any way fault MDE. Their interpretation is absolutely correct. But it didn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, which is why we're here today. We believe this is a simple, common sense solution that would allow districts that are already providing transportation, such as the example I gave in New Prague, to use open seats on buses or vans, so it doesn't add any new real cost, and allow girls to access programs. And just as a very happy side note on those two, while we lost the funding for transportation, they both graduate. So it was a wonderful outcome for kids. The hope here is simply to allow this transportation to exist and create a different mechanism so that districts don't lose the funds for transportation that they would have otherwise had. Thank you.
All right. Representative Tapke, do you have a few other testifiers that can move quickly?
Thank you. Yes, we do. We have two other students who have been through this program and would be able to take utilization of this bill as we move forward. So we have Sydney Landy. Did I say that right?
Landy.
Landy. She's a senior at Tri-City United, and Jolene Reyna, who is a senior also at Eastern Carver County. And Sydney will be first, Madam Chair.
Ms. Landy, do you want to go first? State your name for the record, please, and begin with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sydney Landy. I am a 17-year-old senior from Montgomery and Chaska. Because I don't have reliable transportation to school, I am living between both parents' houses. I have a 1-year-old daughter named Valerie. When I found out I was pregnant, I dropped out of school and tried to do online classes, but I felt isolated and had no support. Then I found out about the New Beginnings program for pregnant and parenting teens in Chaska. New Beginnings provides classes to finish high school, encourages support from peers, connects us with public health nurses and mental health workers, and helps us plan for the future. I am proud to say that because of New Beginnings, I will be graduating on time this spring and have already been accepted to Hennepin Technical College next year to help prepare for a career in the medical field. My daughter, Valerie, has benefited from the on-site childcare. It is developmentally appropriate and safe and serves healthy meals. Valerie knows she's cared for, and I can visit her in the mornings. I have learned much about parenting in the new mom's parenting education class. Unfortunately, I am unable to get a bus to take Valerie and I to school. I drive 35 miles each way and need to work part-time to pay for gas. Sometimes I arrive late or miss days due to transportation issues. I know there are other young moms out there who would benefit from a school like New Beginnings, but have no way to get there if their district does not provide transportation. I know it would have been harder for me to graduate on time. Voting in favor of this bill will help other teen parents stay in school and learn how to care for themselves and their children. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Landy. Ms. Reyna, would you like to go next? Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jolene Reyna. I'm an 18-year-old senior, originally from Jordan and now from Chaska. My daughter, Mia, is 10 months old. I am also thankful for all the support my daughter and I get from the New Beginnings program. However, last year when I lived in Jordan, I did not get any transportation from the district and I missed a lot of school. I would have to come an hour early or stay an hour late to wait for rides. Because of this, I am now a year behind graduating. Thankfully, this year, we moved to Chaska and I get district transportation. I get to school on time and my attendance has improved. Now I am back on track to graduate this June and I plan to attend Hennepin Technical College in the fall to train to be a medical assistant. Your support of this bill will allow other teen parents to get needed support, finish high school, and plan for their futures. Thank you.
Thank you, and I wish you both luck at HCTC next year.
Thank you.
Representative Tapke, would you like any brief comments, and then we'll open it up to questions.
No, Madam Chair. I will take any questions you have.
Thank you, Representative Barr. You were on the list first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tapke, could you, on line 2.25, could you tell me why you picked that date?
Representative Tapke.
Yeah, that is a very interesting question, Representative. And I will turn that one over to Superintendent Kermes here because there is a very specific reason for that.
Superintendent Kearns, proceed.
Madam Chair, Representative, the date chosen last year we brought this bill forward, had extensive hearings over in the Senate, only one hearing here. The date was chosen in an attempt. There was question and concern about how much this would cost. And if once this was done, would programs like ours just pop up all over the state? And would we have a whole, you know, a slew of programs that would then cost an exorbitant amount of money? So a date was chosen with existing programs in mind such that those programs would be able to continue to access the transportation to their programs.
Representative Barr, do you have a follow-up?
Just kind of curious, why, when you came back this year, why didn't you make it January 1st, 2019? That would still include programs that are already existing.
Superintendent or Representative Tapke?
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative, I can't speak to a friendly amendment, but I certainly would have no problem with that. Frankly, I wasn't, if I can be brutally honest for just a moment, I wasn't concerned about the date necessarily last year because I don't see these programs springing up all over the place, even if there was transportation. Again, it was just an attempt to at least put a date certain so that when calculations were done for the fiscal note, it could be there. It could absolutely be July 1 of this year or no date.
Representative Fire, any follow-up?
Good.
Any other questions at the table? Anybody in the audience like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Tapia, I'll let you do a final word.
Thank you very much for your time. I hope everyone has looked at this bill and heard the stories about how it can help students that are in great need and throughout our state. So hopefully you can vote in favor of this bill and help us get this moving forward.
Thank you, Representative Tapia. I renew my motion that House File 681 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And thank you, I believe I have... we have Representative Purcell here, or should why don't we have Representative Richardson come up first? I know we had bumped her to have Representative Tapia come up. So we'll do Representative Richardson's bill, and then we'll do Representative Purcell's bill, and then move on to Representative Erickson's bill. And we've got Representative Richardson here, who has brought more treats. Well, that is good. So, Representative Richardson, as you get settled, Representative Richardson, let's see, Representative Sandell, would you like to move for a bit?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 987 be referred to me the way it means. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have the bill before us. I move that Representative Richardson's bill 987 be moved, and it's going to be heading toward the Government Operations Committee because it has a working group. So, Representative Richardson, would you like to briefly describe your bill? And then I believe you may or may not have a testifier here, so I'll let you take over.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 987 would expand access to driver education courses for low-income students across the state. The bill would also create a driver education work group to study driver education availability and recommend changes to increase access to driver education courses. Once upon a time, driver's education courses were readily available to students who wanted to participate in the public schools. And at this time, driver's education was really considered a rite of passage, and teens were being trained as part of the public school curriculum. Today, the burden for funding driver's education falls onto families, and it's more readily available to those who have disposable income, who can afford to pay for the training. When considering driver's education courses can cost around $400, the teens most likely to be left out are those who are poor. And with approximately 32% of children in Minnesota living in low-income families, there are definitely barriers to access. A national survey that was conducted by the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety found that 20 years ago, two-thirds of teens received their license by age 18. Today, that number is closer to about half of teens that receive their license by 18. We're seeing more teens delaying in getting their licenses, according to that study, the most common reason that teens are delaying getting a license was not having a car. And behind that, a third of those who did not get their license talked about related costs as a factor. When we're thinking about transition age youth and what happens during those formative years, it has real long-ranging implications and impacts. Obtaining a driver's license is not just about fitting in or the stigma that occurs when you're left out, but it's also about the practical realities of access. Access to vital classroom safety training, and also access to economic opportunities as well. Not having a driver's license can be a major barrier to employment. Studies have shown that a driver's license can be a better predictor of someone's ability to transition to a full-time job, more so than even a high school diploma. We spend a lot of time talking about the opportunity gap and disparities in our schools, and access to driver's ed can also contribute to that gap. The AAA study that I referenced earlier cited that 67% of white teens obtained their license by age 18 within that study, compared to 37% of black teens and 29% of Hispanic teens. Also, only 25% of teens living in households with incomes less than $20,000 obtained their license by 18, while 79% of teens in households of incomes of over $100,000 obtained their license by 18. As we continue to work to address existing inequities, one part of that strategy is to craft policies that make drivers' education more accessible. And with that, I will stand for questions, but we also have one testifier, Ms. Jasmine Carey.
Would you like to have your testifier come down? And could you please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Hello, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jasmine Carey, and I am the legislative coordinator with the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. The Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage offers the following statement in support of House File 987. We believe this bill addresses the affordability and access issues that prevent many students from participating in driver's education programs. Access to transportation is often a huge barrier that many people face on a daily basis, but it's mostly disproportionately impacts those who live in poverty. For many, access to transportation means greater access to job opportunities, housing opportunities, educational opportunities, even extracurricular opportunities, affordable options. You know, I could go on. and public transportation is great, but it's limited, especially for those who live in greater Minnesota. We do a lot of outreach around the state, and a lot of people that we work with in Moorhead and St. Cloud and other areas always talk about how, you know, public transportation is out there, but it's scarce, and it prevents them from being able to attain certain jobs and doing certain things just because of the time constraints on it. According to Minnesota Compass, 38.1 children of African heritage in our state live in poverty. So we believe that aligning the eligibility requirements with free and reduced lunch requirements ensures that students with the greatest need are able to benefit from this bill. They will be able to have the same access as their peers, and our hope is that by addressing and removing this barrier at a young age, that it will aid in addressing the income disparities that exist for those in the African heritage community in our state. The Minnesota legislature empowered the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage to advise the governor and the state legislature on issues that impact people of African heritage. That is why we support this bill, and we are urging you to vote yes on House File 987. Access to transportation is one of the social determinants of health and is also seen as a vehicle or a bridge to greater opportunities. We believe by addressing this issue in an equitable way that ensures that students are able to get a fair shot.
Thank you, Ms. Carey. I think I'm going to open it up for member questions. Did anyone have a question? Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Richardson, I'm sorry, Representative Richardson, a question for you. Did you happen to see any studies, or I know that many of us in this room, actually, driver's ed was mandatory for us, and it was paid for, a big portion of it at least was paid for by the schools. Has there been any studies done that show any traffic difference of when that time stopped to now?
Hi, Representative Richardson.
Madam Chair, so some of the information that I found, so looking back at the 1970s, 95% of students were taking driver's ed as part of their public school curriculum. And fast forward to today, it's about 15% of individuals that are getting access to driver's education through their public schools. Wow.
Madam Chair, Representative Richardson, that's amazing. Being in public safety and seeing the results of bad accidents myself, I think this should be a priority and shouldn't even be an option. But I do notice that a lot of millennials are choosing not to take driver's ed or didn't take driver's ed in high school. That's amazing. Just another side note, I just paid my driver's ed bill for my 15-year-old, and it was like $400, so I can see how this is. Yeah.
Representative Hassan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Richardson, thank you for bringing this bill forward. We all know the importance of being mobile and having transportation. Jobs are moving farther to the suburbs and even farther to rural or greater Minnesota now. I should be correct. So it's important that young people who are from low-income families, our inner cities have access to transportation, and having a driver's license is the first step. I just also paid my 15-year-old driver's ed, and it's $400+. So I know that, I don't know if some schools offer scholarships or not, but I know that many are not, mm-hmm. and it's expensive for a family who are on a limited income. $400 is a lot of money. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was part of the, I guess, the 90%. And I'm wondering, okay, today those who do not get driver's education in schools, do they take, you know, classes? Who does the classes? How do they do it?
Representative Richardson.
Madam Chair, thank you. So some individuals are able to take it through, like, tri-district opportunities, so there will actually be opportunities to take classes at the school that are provided by community ed providers, but there are also private providers that offer driver's education as well.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl, follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And perhaps someone from the School Board Association can answer why this change was made from the way it used to be.
School Board Association, do you want to come down and chat? Or Representative Verbal has asked. I know why they're waiting to come down. I know that I was one of the 90% that took it in school too, but our kids did a community ed version, but it was actually the behind the wheel that ends up being the most expensive. We have Ms. Denise Dietrich here. Could you please state your name for the record and maybe attempt to answer Representative Erdahl's question?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Chairwoman, members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I would guess it's financial issue. In the past, 15 years, school districts have been cutting budgets, and I would guess that this just feeds into this more pay for the services that you get type of mentality that has, I think, been very prevalent in the state.
Representative Erdahl, one last follow-up.
Thank you. And Ms. Dietrich, when I was in school, it was just, I think, part of the health class. So the teacher just did it. I mean, it was part of his regular salary that he was being paid for. And it's not possible to do it that way today.
Representative Erdahl, I don't know if we want to put Denise Dietrich on the spot to say
I always like to put school board
to do standards right here and on driver's ed. But Ms. Dietrich, do you want to answer that, and then we'll see who else has questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will just take this opportunity to remind us all that yes, standards have gotten thicker and thicker, and expectations for our teachers and our classwork has become more and more. And we are looking always for more creative, user-focused ways to balance the budget.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? I'll open it up to the audience. Is there anyone here that would like to testify on this bill? Mr. Heller, is it to this bill? Thank you, Mr. Heller. Could you please state your name for the record?
Hi, people on the education policy committee. My name is Rick Heller, and I just represent the twice exceptional people with print disabilities. I have a short story. I know a student that was print disabled that could not pass the manual, but wasn't providing a specialized format for that student. I suggest to the chair and the author of the bill, Ms. Robert Richardson, that they would strike the word low-income students and insert from House File 1370 Gifted and Talented Programming Statute, quote, not limited to low-income students, minority students, voice exceptional students, and students with disabilities or 504 plans under Section 125A.55. When students can't access electives in a timely manner and they fail those, it impedes them to get into the workforce for employment based on the talented pipeline. We have destroyed that pathway and have delayed it, if anything, for those to be engaged in that process and even in a career. That's why the language needs to be struck. It's too narrow, especially when you got students that are gifted that are considered what I expressed in House File 1370 was introduced yesterday. Once again, if the curriculum is not appropriate for the student, how will the school districts assure that they get that in a specialized format in a timely manner, not just for the blind and print disabled, now called reading disability, which is not in the statute? And if we narrow what a barrier is based on web content accessibility guidelines and 508, which is Minnesota Statute 16E.03 Subdivision 9, which currently two state agencies have to do, the academies, Purpich Center, those are state agencies and school districts. They have to do it. But when you get a working group together, you need to consider assistive technology as relates to the people with purchase and blindness. Obviously, there are not going to be too many people driving that I know that are blind, unless you get the automated vehicles, and that's not too far down the road. But I think you have an oversight of the sighted people.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Heller. This bill has another stop. We're past the time for deadline. We're past the deadline for amendments, so maybe you can talk to Ms. Richardson, Representative Richardson, offline about looking at for the next stop. So, Representative Richardson, did you have any other comments on the bill? And then we'll move forward.
I would just make one comment in terms of eligibility for this. The bill talks about low-income students, but it does also provide fees for other students as well. So that would be something that would be within the discretion as well. So it could be broader than that that category of low income. And with that, I just want to thank you and ask for support.
Thank you. I renew my motion that House File 987 be referred to the Government Operations Committee. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The bill is referred to the Government Operations Committee. Thank you. And Representative Purcell, thank you for being so patient. Why don't you come on down to the testifiers table? I've got to stop saying that. I sound like a talk show host.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've got a few testifiers.
Looks like it. And Representative Hewitt, would you like to move House File 525? It's going to be going to the Government Operations Committee.
I would, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Representative Hewitt moves 525 before the committee. And Representative Purcell, would you like to, and Representative Detmer, I hear, is seeing his batting too. So would you like to describe the bill and introduce your testimony?
Briefly, and if I may, Madam Chair, I'm going to defer to Representative Detmer. He's got an amendment up over in Veterans Committee. He needs to run back over, and I'll let him run through it, and then I'll stick around for questions.
Sounds wonderful. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. Thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing this bill forward. It's a similar bill that I brought forward before. I'm thankful that we are able to get this forward because there's 65 school districts around the state that have problems with funding their transportation for their students to school, and we call that transportation sparsity. And again, we carried this before, and I think we got about $14. I know Forest Lake got about $14 a student, which is just a drop in the bucket. I know my school district that I taught for 34 years, retired back in 2007, is about $1 million short every year on this transportation costs. So I think Bemidji's around 800,000. Anoka is around 600,000. There's 65 school districts that have this dilemma, what it costs to bus their students to school versus what the state reimburses them. So, again, I have to run. We get exercise running back up to the Capitol. But thank you for hearing this bill, and thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Purcell, do you want to bring up your first testifier?
I'll do that, Madam Chair, and we've got testifiers from both Forest Lake, Representative Detmer's district hometown, and Bemidji, my hometown. So please, I'm looking for a name here, but it's not coming up, jumping out at me. But
whoever like to go first, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Massey, Superintendent for Forest Lake Area Schools. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 525. Forest Lake is a district just 25 miles north of St. Paul in Minneapolis, and is approximately a district of 220 square miles with an enrollment of 6,100 students. Transportation funding, as you are aware, is based on student enrollment, not the miles a district must drive to transport students. Consequently, districts with a large geography and dispersed housing, like Forest Lake, Bemidji, and as Representative Detmer indicated, 65 some other districts across the state, must offset their transportation costs from the general fund. Specifically, Forest Lake draws approximately $500,000 on the general education side to cover transportation from the general fund every year to cover this transportation deficit. This issue is an issue of equity. $500,000 is equivalent in Forest Lake to approximately 10 teachers or critical services we are not able to provide for students. Specifically, we are asking for two things in this bill. First, to raise the dollar amount currently identified in statute to cover this transportation deficit from 18.2% to a higher level, ideally 100%. Second, to form a comprehensive task force to study this issue and identify a more permanent fix. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent Massey. Next up, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Linen. I'm the business manager from the Bemidji School District, approximately 5,000 students, and I'd like to paint a picture for you as to why it is that transportation is more expensive in our school district than in most, and why this formula is so important to us. I believe you have a handout of a map that I've created some years ago. It shows a picture that has four corners. And imagine, if you will, our school district that starts at Albertville, goes over to Stillwater, down to Rosemont, and over to Shakopee. It's a big box, and we have to cover those miles. So there are four main pieces that go into our deficit, one of which is the sheer geography that we have to cover. The second piece is, that's 825 square miles. The second piece is we actually have to drive over those miles because we have students who live all over that area. Some schools have a lot of square miles, but they don't have to drive over them. So the combination of those two factors lead to our third piece, which is the number of miles that we drive. We drive over 1 million miles per year, bringing kids to school and back to home. And then the fourth piece that adds to our deficit is the extra layer of service that we are required to provide to charter schools. We have three charter schools in our district. We transport about 600 kids for those charter schools. They use our basic transportation system, and then there's an add-on leg to get them to their charter school. So those are the four pieces of why we end up with a deficit, and the adjustment formula that sits at 18% now, if it could be moved to 100%, that would bring our deficit from over $500,000 down to zero, and that would be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lynam. Thank you for making the trip down, too. Representative Purcell, did you have anything else to add before we open to questions?
No, let's go to questions.
All right. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the gentleman that made it up here from, or down here from Bemidji, I look at this and I'm just going, I wonder what the longest bus ride is that any kid has going one way, just out of curiosity.
Mr. Lynam.
Madam Chair, Representative, we attempt to keep bus rides at about an hour occasionally, though we can't, geography being what it is. And then you add into that the slow times of winter, and yes, bus rides can get up to an hour and a half. We could bring bus times down by adding more buses and more bus drivers, and if anyone knows anyone who wants to drive bus for us, I'm in. But that's a difficult task when you already have a $500,000 deficit to pile on top of it. So it's a balancing act between efficiency and filling your buses as full as you can get them.
Thank you. Representative Scott, did you have a follow-up?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, from the gentleman from Bemidji, I forgot your name. My question is more about replacing these buses that do that many miles. How long does an average bus last you when you have to purchase it?
Mr. Lynam.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative, we attempt to replace buses on about a 200,000-mile rotation. We have an excellent staff that takes care of buses and maintains them. We buy approximately 5 buses per year at about $100,000 per bus. We run 82 bus routes on a regular basis, and so we rotate them through as we can, keeping in mind that occasionally you have some types of buses that last longer than others. But, yeah, we run them up to 200,000 miles.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kroonhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks to the testifiers. Thanks for what you do there, too. I was a school board member for quite a few years, and one of the things we did, and maybe you shared this and I missed it, is our costs were quite substantial. We had several rural districts, several merged districts, and we had quite a bit of area to cover. I don't know if it was quite as big as yours, but it was pretty substantial. But we did finally decide to privatize our buses. Is your current bus service privatized, or is it run by the school district?
Mr. Lynam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. With regard to our service, of our 82 bus routes, 3 of them are private. The rest are run by us. We find that we do a good job of providing the service, and we haven't had a lot of interest in larger companies coming up and knocking on our door. It's not something that's a popular concept of privatizing. Bemidji's a certain distance from, I would say, the core of the larger bus providers.
Superintendent Massey, did you want to add to that?
Madam Chair, Representative, we actually run our own transportation program as well. We've done that study 5, 6, 7 years ago. Our conclusion was, over the long term, it's more cost-effective for us to run our own transportation program rather than sub out and contract.
Representative Kroonhagen, follow up.
Just a follow-up comment. Yeah, it would be interesting to see comparative statistics sometime between districts that had privatized their bus services, what the costs were before and what the costs were after, compared to districts that run their own bus service. In our particular case, on the school board I was on, pardon? 16 years, yeah. He can never remember that, so I got to keep reminding him. But it did save us, you know, we were an SOD, we were declining in school district and enrollment, and it did, it was a tough decision, but it did save us a substantial amount of money, and our service was as good or the same or better after we made that change. It wasn't easy, I will admit that.
Representative Kroonhagen, that's the joy of local control. I know our district did a hybrid approach in Hopkins. We purchased a bus barn and then had private companies rent it out, and we contracted through them, and that was a good way of saving costs, too. Representative Erickson, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the superintendent from Bemidji, welcome. It's good to have you here. If you could do an overlay on this map that you prepared, Where's the lake in conjunction to this outline of your district?
Mr. Lynam,
Madam Chair,
making your drive worthwhile here.
Thank you. I also would appreciate the bump in salary that I would get if I was the superintendent. I'm the business manager.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I really am not interested in the political targeting that happens with superintendents on an unfortunate basis. I live amongst the beans and the numbers, and they are a lot safer. I would say that the Lake Bemidji itself is in maybe the bottom right area of that, and then off to the right would be Cass Lake. And then way up at the north is Red Lake, and then off to the left would be a town called Bagley. So when you see that, one other aspect of that map and the reason why privatization might not work very well, approximately half of our buses are stored at people's homes in the outer reaches of our district. We run a system that looks like a spider's web, so the buses start at the outer reaches and work their way into Bemidji and then work their way back out. So operating out of a central hub really wouldn't work for us very well. Half of our routes do. The other half really need to be starting at dark 30 in the morning at a location that's 20-30 miles away and making its way back into town.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. And I apologize. I think business managers are just as important as superintendents because you know the budget so well. So do you have open enrollment in Bemidji? I can't remember. You have such a fabulous new campus for your high school that I can't imagine it's not rather attractive to the outliers.
Mr. Lynam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, we do have open enrollment. We have a significant number of private school students who actually enroll in our school to take advantage of some of the services that we have. Those are shared time students. We have open enrollment coming into the district, but we also have open enrollment going out of the district because when you're as large as we are, someone's home might be closer to another town where they have daycare or they have their job or they have their family. And so we are actually a net loser on the open enrollment side of the equation. So that's really not an option for us to consider closing open enrollment and solving our transportation needs. We transport all the students who come to us. We do have arrangements with open enrollment areas outside of our boundaries where we meet them at the border, so to speak, but basically we lose kids through the open enrollment process.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions at the table? Anybody in the audience like to testify on this bill? Representative Purcell, final words.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I, for those of you committee members that have been around a while, you've seen this bill before or something very similar to it because I think either Detmer or I have carried this for 10 years. And little progress has been made over those that decade, but we appreciate your support, and this is for the students. We're trying to keep students in classes and not pay to put, you know, run them back and forth to home out of classroom money. So appreciate your support, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. And Mr. Lynam, I hope you get back up to Bemidji before it starts snowing tomorrow. And I will renew my motion to refer House File 525 to the Government Operations Committee. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. The bill is referred to Government Operations Committee. Thank you. And then we have our final bill of the day, Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson, would you like to move your bill before
our committee? Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move House File 761, I think, to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Oh, I have it down here to be laid over. It does not have to go to Ways and Means. I talked to Chair Dabney. we might have to have a discussion, and but I believe it does not have a fiscal note. So would you like to begin your testimony on your bill, please?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 761 is a bill that, again, like Representative Purcell said, is for the students. And in this case, it's about transportation of those students who may be enrolled in a cooperative program. This issue came to me because I had a student who was served by the Mille Lacs School District and then became more or less a homeless student. His parents moved to the Anoka School District, and the confusion then resulted from who would provide the transportation for this student, and that happened to end up to be Anoka. So this proposal would allow the initial serving school district to provide the transportation services to and from the cooperative program for a homeless student who has an IEP, and the serving district changes or could change during the school year. But it also allows for some negotiations between the serving district and the initial and the current district if they choose an alternative transportation arrangement. So that, Madam Chair, I think, and committee, I'm sure my testifiers are going to refer to the handouts, but I'd like to call your attention to the handout that has the schematic on the back from the intermediate that shows you the current process versus what is proposed in this bill that was included last year in the Omnibus Education Bill. So you can see on the right the simplification that we're trying to provide for that student. So there's consistency, security in knowing that his or her needs are going to be met in the cooperative to which they have begun their schooling and the IEP matches. So that's on the right hand, quite simplified compared to the current process. So I think, Madam Chair, with that, I'll turn to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Erickson, and thank you on behalf of all of us visual learners for the schematic. Would you like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Connie Hayes. I'm superintendent at Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate District. For those of you that have not heard me testify for the last 14 years, I'll tell you a little bit about the students who our member districts enroll in our programs. They come to us with very, very significant challenges, including collectively now a disability, a mental illness, trauma, complex psychopharmacology profiles, aggression, and also sometimes homelessness. Today I'm going to tell you a story about Joshua. Joshua is 16 and attends our district at Core Education Center. He recently had a very traumatic event in his family, and he had to find a new place to live. The staff at Cora are Joshua's source of support, and he wanted to be there to be with his teachers and his friends. A family was able to temporarily take him in, but this family did not live in the same district as his prior family. And so transportation suddenly became unknown. Unfortunately, it took 10 days for Joshua to get scheduled for his new transportation to return to Core Education Center. If this bill is approved this year and signed by the governor, students like Joshua will not miss many days of school while new transportation arrangements are set up. Joshua, as you can imagine by some of the factors that I've outlined here, has a lot of things working against him. But we know at 916, if we are able to provide the kind of intensive, consistent supports and interventions to students like Joshua, they actually have a good chance of becoming the best that they can be. Now, 10 consecutive days out of school is a lot for any student. And with homeless students, it is not uncommon for them to move around frequently, and so 10 days can quickly multiply again and again, and you can start to add up the number of days that they are out of school due to so many moves. So homelessness, homeless students like Joshua at the intermediate districts and other cooperatives around the state have to cope with these enormous challenges in their lives. Simply getting to school every day should not be a barrier. So thank you for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Superintendent Hayes. Would you like to proceed? State your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Ryan Strack. I'm with Minneapolis Public Schools. And as the last testifier on the last bill, on the last hearing, I'll exercise brevity and just thank the committee and the chair for hearing the bill. Thank Representative Erickson for, again, carrying this bill. And just to say that, as has been kind of pointed out, we're dealing with what is a contradiction or a confluence of lots of different aspects and ending up in a difficult situation for students who really need consistency the most. And we believe this proposal will offer that as best it can. And so I will, with that, be available if there are questions. I know it's kind of a complicated thing as much as we've tried to simplify it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, any other comments before we open up for questions?
No, Madam Chair, let's hear the questions.
Okay, any member questions? Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know which testifier can answer this question. Is this mode of transportation, is this primarily done by privates, or is it done within the district, or how is it done?
Who would like to take that?
Madam Chair, committee members, it depends district by district. In some cases, this would be operated by a district's own service. What we're talking about here is, in general, students who have a particular kind of transportation service based on their IEP, so it's going to depend quite a lot if they can put multiple students on there, if they're using a specialized van with perhaps a wheelchair lift or another mode. So I would say there's no common practice. Other situations, it could be a contracted type 3 provider, which might be a van or car service. Sometimes there are taxi companies that are certified to provide this kind of transportation. So it varies quite a lot.
Representative Hewitt, follow-up? No? Representative Hassan?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you to Representative Erickson for bringing this bill forward. It's long overdue, especially for coming from Minneapolis, which has the largest two shelters in the state. A lot of this issue do end up, laying over in Minneapolis school district shoulders. Just a quick question. I'm going to ask the representative from 916, District 916. Who is responsible for the tuition of the student?
Superintendent Hayes.
Madam Chair, member. As a school district, the school board has some responsibility for setting tuition. Most of the tuition billing is established by the Department of Education. When a student attends our program who is a non-member district student, so, for example, a student from Minneapolis coming to 916 would be a non-member student, that school district has to pay for the cost of that student attending our district. Our member districts will pay a membership fee, lease levy, safe schools levy, and long-term facilities maintenance cost. And so when that non-member student finds their way into our district, 916 has to charge back to, let's say, Minneapolis, the cost of what the members pay to be a part of the services at 916. Hopefully that made sense. It's complicated.
A quick follow-up, Madam Chair. So would you support making the placing district paying for the tuition and the cost of the student? Am I understanding that correctly, or am I lost?
Superintendent Hayes, we're getting a little far field because we're not a finance committee, but I'll let you quickly answer, and then we'll move on.
So that's already what exists.
Okay.
If Minneapolis were to enroll a student in 916, they are responsible for the cost. Okay. In addition to that, if a student from Minneapolis were to open enroll into one of our member districts as a way to get into our programs, that cost still goes back to Minneapolis District.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Sun? No? Any other questions at the table?
Representative Wasilowick.
I'm going to eventually get that right.
Got a few more months. Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, I just wanted to clarify, this is only for students who have IEPs, correct?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes.
Thank you. Good clarification. Any other questions? Any member of the audience like to come down and testify? Seeing none, Representative Erickson, would you like to have final word?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just before I close, in response to Mr. Heller, I do think accommodations are made for children who have the issues that he described. I'll look into that because I work closely with Mr. Heller, as I'm sure you also are these days. But I think there's been an accommodation made, but I'd like to check that because certainly we want those children to be able to train so they could get a driver's license. But with that, Madam Chair, thank you for hearing House File 761, and I would ask for your support as we move forward.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And I know there was some confusion about where it's going because in the title it actually says appropriating money, but in the language it's not, so it must have just been a clerical error. So I'm going to move to lay this bill over. And with that, folks, we will see each other tomorrow, same time, this room, five more bills. The meeting's adjourned.